This is the Kate and Colby Show Garage Sessions, special episodes we record for you, our pod fam. Join us as we return to our roots with just two mics, two co-hosts, and one desire to talk about things that matter. Can we take it back to 95 before we had this drama in our lives? Just staring at the screen every day and night. I miss the rush of living in real life. Go get your DeLorean. Oh, miss the summers. Okay. Recording begun. Microphone's on.
Well, hello there again, Colby.
Hi, Kate.
And Pod Fam. Hi.
We're on the air.
Rawr.
On the air with Kate Christensen Martin, host of the Kate and Colby Show.
I'm just glaring at you.
Yeah, this is when I'm maybe grateful we're not live streaming so that our Pod Fam can't see the looks
the glare.
You give me.
I don't like radio the voice. Look, and then I feel like you're looking at me to do it back. And I'm like, I'm not going to do radio voice back.
I'm always looking at you to do it back. And you never have even...
I know. I'm a giant disappointment to you. Always.
And I'm a perpetual... Not disappointment.
How are you?
What's the...
Just move on.
Why?
How are you? Because it's last time to move on.
Last time I threw out dongle and I got
know.
A lot of mileage out of it. So maybe...
No.
There's a similar...
Nope.
Goodness to
follow. How's it going? I'm just going to keep saying it until you move on.
It's good.
Yeah. How you doing?
It's good enough.
Good enough? Is that how you feel these days? Good enough?
Yes.
Or currently? Really?
Yeah.
Can you say more about that? What does that mean to you to say good enough? What's enough?
Never enough. I don't know. I froze the other day as well when someone that we had our church's 8th year anniversary the other day. And so we had a picnic after church at the park and we saw some people who haven't seen in a while. And one person asked me, how you been? And I just freeze at that question. The question just feels way too big for me to know how to answer.
Yeah.
And I will generally say something like that in response. Like I'll say, can you get more specific? What are you asking? Like,
oh, you will, you'll share that you're uncomfortable with the question. Like, you're like, I disagree with the question.
What aspect of my life are you curious about or what timeline? And I don't know. I don't know what, maybe part of that is driven by my discomfort with fine culture, you know, especially in the church. Maybe part of that is trying to be more in tune with how I actually am. So not just reciting tapes. I mean, we've talked about that before on the show. But yeah, it's a question that I don't know how to answer. And I don't know if that's just reflexive of just how I am in life right now. Like maybe if I could take a time machine and jump 3 years into the future, maybe I know if I go 3-5 years in the past, I would not have a problem answering that question, but I think that'd be for different reasons.
I was going to share that. I was going to say that hearing you talk about all this is actually really delightful for me as your partner in life. It's really neat to hear you say this because in the past, and I think you're okay with me saying this, if not, we can edit it out. Yeah. But I think you say it yourself and we're about to, basically. I'm just filling it in for you. If in the past you were fine culture, that was you. Mm. Fine, good. In fact, we'd be going through hard times together or as a family and people would ask us how we were and you'd quickly say, good, fine, good, fine, good, fine. And I'd be over there by myself, uncomfortable, like the you now. And so it's cool to hear you talk about this shift and this now discomfort with that reality and struggle to answer the question. Does that make sense? And is that fair to share?
Oh, 100%. Yes, it makes sense. And 100% is fair to share. I'm just sitting here thinking like, I don't know that I like this version better.
Oh, that's so cute.
You know, like.
I want to squish your cheeks when you say that. I do. I want to squish your cheeks.
I should say it's, I very much don't like that version of me that was, you know, projecting the fine image. Like I that's problematic in all sorts of ways.
Yeah, but it was more. Yeah, the reason why I was like, oh, you're so cute, I want to squish your cheeks, is because I think your personality type is adorable. And that's what I heard you just, you're like, it's hard to do real. Like, right? It's
socially far.
It's cute.
That version of me was more comfortable socially than the version now.
The stripped down, raw, shedding the persona version is hard.
I feel like I'm making the other person uncomfortable as I like hem and haw. It's like, they probably, and this person I'm sure genuinely did want to know, like it wasn't even meant in a surface level way, so.
Right.
But as I sit there, we haven't yet found, I'm quickly tangenting, because I think you ran into the other day you said the same thing. What's a better word that means for paralyzed that we want to say we were paralyzed by?
I know. I keep trying to find a better word for it and I haven't yet.
Maybe one that I'll look into that. Yeah. Less able focused. So that word, like I find myself just more that word and I feel like it puts the other person in a sort of uncomfortable.
Does stuck fit in there? Okay. A lot of times what I'm trying to describe is being stuck.
Yeah.
I feel stuck.
Yeah. So how am I? Part of it is it's frozen. There's just too
much. Frozen.
There's
frozen.
Too many ways that I could respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I could say, I'm not saying this is true right now, but I could say professionally, I'm very frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, I'm kind of okay. Relationally, I feel really good in some parts and really not good in other parts. So like, I don't know. I don't know how I am. So
yeah.
I don't know. So you know what I think I've done? And one of the ways that I've responded to this in my own way is I don't know. I think I've been asking people that question less. Like that's not what I lead with anymore when I see people that I haven't seen in a while. I'm just realizing that just now. Like I don't think I ask people how they are. And maybe that's twofold. Maybe it's because I don't want them to ask me back, or maybe it's because I'm aware that that question can just be a really hard question to ask. So I sometimes will get like real specific and I'll just be like, hey, so-and-so, tell me something good. Like tell me something good from the last week. Like I'll just get real granular and real specific and give them a chance to really succeed in answering my question.
I like that. I like that. Because what you called it earlier, fine culture is American through and through. And it's definitely evangelical Christianity through and through, right? Fine. How are you? Fine. Mm-hmm. It's just steps you take. It's just a script. There's nothing genuine about it. It doesn't lead to, it's not an actual practice. It doesn't, what does that do? Nothing.
What does that
do? That doesn't do anything. It's just like, well, there, I did the social steps. Yeah. So I hope that we can get to a place where how are you means how are you? And then we do well at answering, which I would argue you're fumbling through is that. But I like you switching away from it for a while. This is interesting because it leads into what we're talking about. I like you overcorrecting and being like, not asking people how are you anymore. Mm-hmm. You're deconstructing how are you in fine culture and just being like, well, not going to do that for a while because I can't figure out a new way to do it yet.
Yeah.
And so I'm just going to not do it, which doesn't mean that asking people how they are is a bad thing.
Correct. Right?
It's that we've got this problem with it in our culture. And so you're trying to figure out your way through that.
Yeah.
And you haven't yet figured out the dance yet. So you're like, I'm going to try a little bit of this and try a little bit of that. And it's clunky and I'll figure it out. And you're not sitting there thinking that the people who are asking, how are you, are jerks or you're judging them for it. But
anyway. It's similar to how years ago I also stopped asking strangers or people that I'm just meeting what they do for a living.
Mm-hmm.
I almost never ask that unless the situation really lends, like, you know, my brother and I go golfing almost every week and we more often than not are paired up with strangers, as is the system of golf. And I just don't ask, like, it's pretty common in that context for, oh, what do you do? And I just, years ago, I eradicated that because that's just, to me, we've way over-identified in our society who we are with what we do. And so as soon as you hear what someone does, you subconscious or pre-consciously just fill in all sorts of boxes about this person.
Yeah. And you and I are more sensitive to that reality because of the fact that people, there's no occupation where people do that more than with ours. Yeah. Oh, you're a pastor? We talk about all the time how people like hang out with us for a while. Then we say we're a pastor and they retroactively feel bad for everything that they shared.
For the last hour.
Yeah.
For swearing.
Sorry, I cussed. That's the go-to apology.
Like, good job, pastors. Way to make yourself known for being fragile around swear words.
Oh my God. Weirdos.
Weirdos.
Anyway, speaking of weirdo pastors, we are in this series talking about what quote we were saying, quote unquote, deconstruction. Why are we saying quote unquote? I'll answer that because I'm the one that said we should say quote unquote.
Love it. Way to handle your non-rhetorical question.
I like that I asked myself an interview question on the show. No, I just wanted to share that to get the ball rolling on this. So this episode, we really want to talk about like the basics of what does that word even mean? What are we even talking about? And kind of what is the community of this and what does it mean? So I was like hesitating calling it deconstruction because A, I don't know what that means. Mm-hmm. When you say that, like, I don't know. Mm-mm. I'm not really sure. I like it better when people add the word religious to it. So when they say religious deconstruction, that's helpful for me a lot. Because then I know what a little bit more to break down your old ways of thinking, to deconstruct those. But in general, that term is hard for me. So that's why I wanted to do the quote unquote, because it's hard for me not knowing what all it means. And then it's also hard for me because it's now become a movement that I don't really feel a part of.
Yeah.
And yet I've been doing what folks would say that work is for years. And that's
and we have occasionally used the term. We've dipped in and out of using the term.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it's a great shortcut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, shortcut and a handhold. It's something to say when we're trying to describe this indescribable experience. Yeah. But it's really just folks who've grown up in some sort of religious structure. And here in the United States, where we're talking about it, most assuredly, you mean evangelical Christianity. Some people might come from a few different sects of Christianity when they say that, but mostly it's the non-congregational evangelical church, right? By and large. Anyway, it's coming out of that, having your eyes opened in some way to that's not what I want for my life. And that's really all it means, right? It's walking away from, it's just being an apostate. But are there some more particulars to it than that?
For some, yeah.
You know?
For each person, and that's what we'll talk about here, is there's a shared experience or shared like base note of experience in this movement out of and or away from a kind of religion. Mm-hmm. There's enough commonalities in there that I think people have found it really helpful and even necessary. I think I would add to have a language and or descriptor and or way to talk about it.
Yeah.
So that we can, you know, it's like the term sport is super broad and super covers a whole bunch of things, but it at least gives some parameters for what we're about to talk about.
Yeah.
We know there's whatever, a competition. We know there's blah, 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 blah. Yeah, so this term
I'm like, what do we know about sports? I don't know. Our youngest was surprised the other day when we said something was a sport. I forget what it was, but what? That's a sport?
Hunting.
Oh, that's right. It shouldn't be.
He was mortified.
Mortified.
So this term deconstruction. What is there a way to describe it? Is there a way to define it? When we were preparing for this episode a while back, I have a bunch of notes here that I'm not going to bore anybody with, but I was doing a bit of a...
You and your cute boring
notes. Yeah, me and my little notes here, just not a super deep dive, but some dive into where did this term come from? Because it's been around for a while, but in our sort of religious post-evangelical circles, both virtually and in person, it's reached a fever pitch in the last couple of years.
Yeah, yeah.
So 5 years ago, maybe some people were using the term. 7 to 10 years ago, probably not at all. Even like just maybe some of the most leading front edge thinkers, people who were trying to talk about it, but it wasn't an everyday term. But the term itself goes like way back to philosophy and Jacques Derrida, and originally was used in a very particular context to say that you can take a text, any given text, and the text itself can be self-critiquing to reveal that there are multiple meanings within a given text. And it's a way of showing like that there is a binary and our binary is real. And how to, and like a, any text can sort of create a binary that, that it then knocks over. And so it had this very specific, like philosophical
flips
slash
over on top of itself and crushes itself down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So like,
that sounds right for what we're talking about.
So it's deconstruction started as kind of like a lens that you would put on as a way to critique something, kind of like a method of operation, where you have to have binaries to evaluate a thing that ultimately then asks the question, are binaries real? So this was like the very narrow way that deconstruction as a term was created and used as a way to analyze literature.
Right.
Now, fast forward multiple decades, and it's become kind of this catch-all term to describe, I think, what people are trying to name when they are looking at their set of beliefs, looking at the things they used to think and believe and the ways they used to operate in the world. And there's a kind of tearing down of that. And so the word itself, even it almost like it feels like it communicates viscerally, and like you get the image right away when you hear it. It's almost like it doesn't need to be described because the word itself tells you everything you need to know about what's happening here. You are taking something that was constructed and you are de-ing it. You are tearing it down. Mm. And so now it has a way more broad usage than it originally did. But I think one of the things we want to explore here together is, because of its broadness, how useful is it? How useful has it become? Why do you and I maybe not use it as much as others do? That's interesting to me.
Yeah.
Was there a time for you where you did use it more frequently? Because there was for me a time where I might have used it more liberally and been less hesitant or less reserved in using it. Whereas now I'm like, use it very carefully. And sometimes we'll do like what you did with the series, quote unquote, deconstruction.
Yeah.
Because now, like, as a way to put it, almost as a way to distance myself from it.
For sure. Oh, yeah. Definitely had recent distancing myself from it. Yeah. No, I don't remember a time, but I'm sure folks could point to the internet and tell me I'm wrong about myself. But I don't remember a time when I used it much. Mm. But that's really just what I was going to say, part of the answer to why we don't as much is just age. We weren't part of the group that has now made, we aren't part of the group that has now made it such a big movement. That's not us. That's not our group of folks. They're a lot younger than us. The folks that most people think of when
primarily
they
identify or exist online.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, yes, yes. The mostly internet community of deconstructionists. When folks start thinking of names and faces, I don't think it's our names and faces. And I don't just mean because we're not famous. I just mean, our in a collective way, like demographic age group way.
Yeah.
I don't mean personalities, like people are supposed to know who Kate and Colby Martin are. I just mean we just are a little bit older, and kind of by the time that became a popular movement had moved through a lot of the stages.
That's right.
That the popular movement is currently
That's right.
in.
Yep.
a lot of times we have that feeling that folks have where they're like, I don't fit in any of the groups, because the older folks who've been doing this for way longer, who are like the emergent church folks.
Yeah, emerging church.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Like those are our idols. And some of them have become really good friends and mentors, which is incredible. But they're light years. I hate using words of like ahead or behind.
Before?
Even earlier when I said, already did that, I felt a little pretentious in saying that.
We used the metaphor of dance in our previous episode, and we thought we'd carry that forward here. Yeah. So
they've been dancing longer than us?
Yes. They're a few steps farther down in this dance.
Yeah. They know a lot more dance moves.
They know a lot more dance moves. There you go.
How about that? Yeah, like when we sit down with Brian, every time I'm just like, oh, right, there's clicks. There's, to keep with the dance thing, just for ease of words, there's, yeah, just dance moves. There's dance moves this guy has that I still marvel at. Like you would if you showed up to a salsa class and there was people there who'd been doing it for 30 years.
Yep.
You'd be like, holy crap, how do their feet move like that?
That's right.
When Brian shares, Brian McLaren. I'm just like, when he shares a thought about faith shifting and changing your beliefs and doubt and losing your old religion, when he talks about that stuff, I just look at him like brain blowing emoji, right?
How does his hips move like that? Hips don't lie.
We like your hips, Brian.
Oh, baby, when you talk like that.
Anyway, that's my admiration coming out, because these folks have been our idols for so long. But the point is that we're kind of in this weird middle age group where we're like, oh, I don't fit there. And then when I listen to the folks who are younger than us talk about deconstruction, I'm like, most of the time, I just can't figure out what their Instagram stories mean. I've got this real old person thing where I'm like, I would love to talk about this deconstruction thing. I just don't know. When you posted that, was that you responding to that person's post? Uh-huh. Were those letters typed on that page your letters, or was that the other person's letters? And how do you figure out which? Do you ever have that?
Yes.
Where you're like, literally no idea what's going on in this Instagram story. And I'm so distracted by not knowing the technology.
Yeah, baby, we're getting old. And even before
what is TikTok? I don't know.
We stayed
clear. What are reels? I have no idea what reels are. Reels are weird. What are reels? What does that even mean?
What's happening?
See, we're old. So part of it's just age.
We're learning the salsa.
Part of it's age.
Yeah. And you were saying even before we hit record on this, that it's similar to how as elder millennials, like we are, by the most strictest definition of the age markers, we are millennial, but we exist in this kind of 5-year window of people that also really are sort of uniquely not.
Well, we're the oldest millennials. I think they call us geriatric, but there's
rude.
Everything that's said about millennials, we don't resonate with. We're like, that's not us at all. But then we're clearly not any of the other generations either. And that is that truly you can pick up that idea and put it right on top of the deconstruction one. Yeah. That's how I feel. I'm not part of that group. Started all, got this ball rolling, but I'm not part of the group that got it popular now either. I just kind of feel out there.
Yeah.
But okay. I love them all.
What if we spend a few moments going back and forth, and if we don't like this idea, we'll say no, and then we'll edit this out. What if we go back and forth on what's something we like about deconstruction, and that could be taken in terms of the community, they could be taken in terms of the word, whatever, and what's something that we struggle with?
Yeah, let's turn like though in, so it's not like a popularity contest like, but like let's turn it into what's helpful and useful for us.
Okay.
And then what is not.
Okay.
You want to start?
Yeah. So one thing that I find helpful about this term, and this is probably just a reiteration of what I said a minute ago, but I want to come back to it because it does feel like the central thing for me, is it provides a shortcut for people to instantly coalesce around a shared experience that I used to be a part of this thing and I'm not anymore. And you also used to be a part of this thing and you're not anymore. And we could probably take a good guess as to like 4 to 6 reasons why.
Mm. And like, we can share and connect on those instantly.
And we can share and connect on those. And the more we get into depth of them, we'll find inevitably some disagreement, which I think is where we're going to get to part of where this breaks down for us. But the shortcut of, oh yeah, you also can relate to that experience. You know what that's like. You know some of the, mm-hmm. like there's shorthand knowledge of some of the jargon and the words. And
then there's an instant trust there.
Yeah.
In some way.
Yes. In some way there's a we'll shortcut to connection later, there. But, so that's one thing I like about it is the way it kind of instantly provides a sense of, oh yeah, you too. Me too. Same.
I like that too. I'm going to jump to a not helpful.
Great.
I really, really find it unhelpful that word, like you said earlier, is so visceral. I don't like that.
Oh, yeah.
That visceral picture of destruction.
Yeah.
Deconstruction sounds destructive because it is. There's an element of that. But, of course, we would argue that's a good thing. But while that is good work, I don't like the instant image of something being broken or doing breaking or how it sounds. It sounds in the negative instead of in the positive. It has that, just the instant. Like, I'm just talking like at first sound, to where a lot of folks are like, I don't really want anything to do with that because all they ever talk about is what they're against or what they don't want. And it kind of gets that reputation super quick because of the word itself. Like, we have that reputation for a lot of reasons, I believe, but one of them is just the word itself. It's just such a fast image in your brain of destruction.
Negativity.
And in a negative way.
Yeah. And again, and you would be the first to say this, negativity and destruction are not inherently bad things.
Totally. 100%. And yet I find myself not liking a movement that is known for that.
That is known for that. Mm-hmm. Well said. Well said. Another thing that I find value in it or help is because, and this is maybe the other side to that coin, but it immediately captures this sense that part of the work here is to evaluate what we've been given and begin to make like in-depth assessments and audits of it. And that it goes back to why you said you like the term, like, or you prefer more specifically religious deconstruction, because what it's saying is there was a construct given to me by culture, by family, by community. And I have hit a point in my life where I want to make some adult assessments of that. As opposed to perhaps previous eras that have come before us where the internet wasn't an option. So you didn't get to go Google and research like, when was the Bible actually written? Or did Jesus really, like all the things that we could now question with just absolute, whenever we want. So part of why I like this term is because it communicates that there has been effort to look for either the renewal or the redemption or the reformation of something that we used to have. I've got this quote here from G.K. Chesterton that says, "You must love something enough to commit to the hard work of seeing it reformed and renewed." And so I think the most charitable interpretation of those who are doing a kind of deconstruction is it is born out of a love for a thing that I want to ask questions of it. I want to get curious about it. I want to see where and how it needs reformed and restored. And that happens for many people in their process of quote unquote deconstruction.
Mm. Yeah.
Where they realize that this thing was incredibly misogynist and I don't want that in my life. Or this thing was incredibly baked in white supremacy and I don't want that in my life. Or this thing was incredibly like focused on believing the right things, and I don't want that in my life.
Yeah. That is very similar to what I was going to share I like about it, but I'll just go ahead and still say it because it's a little different. And in my own way, I just love the space to be able to, like, similar to the how are you question we were talking about, I just love the space to be able to say when we don't think something's great, when something's not working for us, when we don't like something, the room for dissent, the room for each one of these, I'm like, as we're going in real time, going through my head, having a back and forth argument, like an angel and a devil in my head going, yeah, but you can't do that in deconstruction world. Yeah, but you can't do, like,
yeah,
in my head, in real time, going through and seeing how some of this stuff is true sometimes in this world slash community slash movement. But you can see where it's also the exact opposite, which I guess we'll get into. But anyway, in general, the space to be able to say, I don't like that. Or I'm not good right now, or this doesn't work for me. That freedom to speak against, I guess is how I would say it. Mm-hmm. Encouragement to do so even. I like that. I definitely, my personality and my experiences in the world growing up the way that I did, definitely appreciate that ability to speak fiery thoughts and have those be not only not told that those are sinful, but actually told that those are desired and wanted here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so then let's go to where that was lending itself to, which is, and yet there is a part of many aspects of what we have observed and in our own ways experienced in this kind of deconstruction community, which feels like you've asked questions that have got you here, or you've had differing viewpoints that have got you here, but now that you're here, we need you to sort of get in line.
Sign on the dotted line, yeah.
It's felt like evangelicalism was a lap pool, and there were some of us that are like, I would like to make some waves and some splashes because I feel like the smoothness of this water is unnatural and maybe not for me. And so we splash and we crash and we find ourselves in a different pool of splashers and crashers only to turn around and find a couple lifeguards that are like, hey, love that you're here, but stop splashing. Like
this is how we do.
This is how, this is, yes.
Straight lines of straight and narrow.
And it's, yeah. It has really felt like that, or like whatever the apex of the term deconstruction has hit in the last couple of years, it feels like it's begun to almost turn on itself a bit.
I'm glad you just said that because I was about to interrupt you to make sure that that was clear and to say, so I'll add to it. I actually want to go back and say that when we make this critique, which dear God, talk about what we just said we love. We love the space where you can critique the thing, you know, like, sorry, I'm getting flustered as I'm talking about, I'm not apologizing. That's part of it. I'm getting flustered as I'm talking about it because I'm realizing how much that has impacted me over the last few years of that realization that we just carry the space of it's good to critique and it's good to have disagreement. And then we make a brand new space in the world where we go, oh, but it was good to do that over there in that unhealthy thing, but not in this one. Mm. This one's protected. And anyway, but I was going to challenged the word community. I don't know that I like calling it, when we talk about this, the deconstruction community.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
You do? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, when I critique these things, I think I'm fine saying the deconstruction movement when I speak about these things. I want to speak about, it's humans that are doing it, obviously, but I want to speak about the thing and not the people. And I think that inherently when you create a space where there's line drawing and gatekeeping, that's not community, right? So if I'm critiquing that there's a bunch of gatekeeping, then I'm not critiquing a community. I'm critiquing a movement that has decided it has gatekeepers. Like it ceases to become a community when it's like, oh, you've got these doctrines that you have to subscribe to.
See, and I go
rules
a different,
you have to abide by.
I go a different way with it.
Yeah.
Like I'm thinking back to my work a couple of years ago studying sociology with regards to movements becoming institutions. Mm-hmm. And the way that that happens is you begin to formalize and create ways to preserve the gains that you made as a movement.
100%.
So for me, the transformation from movement to community happens by, and even thinking about a tribal group of people sort of moving mm-hmm. throughout a place, the community begins once you stay in a place where you know where the edges are and you know, like, what does it look like to belong to this community, mm-hmm. as opposed to the movement, which has no stability, no boundaries, no place.
I don't think we're disagreeing here. I think we're talking about two different things, because okay. I 100% know that that's how that works and agree that that's how that works. I don't even think there's anything to disagree. That's just how that works. So I think what I was trying to speak to is that, so if you do that work and you I hate saying draw lines, because then that's leaking over into
it's
what I'm talking
totally
about.
Totally hard to talk about.
When you create the structure that mm-hmm. says, this is where we hang out, this is our group, and this is what we do here. What you and I are both saying is that's just building the thing.
Yeah.
That's what humans do, and that's healthy and good and valuable, and it creates a thing. That's beautiful. What I was moving to is what we do is we create communities, and then we make them cease to be a community. Okay. Like, I'm talking about the next click over after we do that.
Yeah.
Like, it's like deconstructionists have done that work, made the movement a community, built the things that here's where we hang out, this is what we do, exactly what you're talking about. And then they went, oh, but we need gatekeepers to keep other people and to kick the people out that are already in and to keep other people out and to do all the unhealthy then things mm-hmm. that happen in that. And that's what I was speaking to is basically we destroy community. I think that's what I'm trying to say, is we ruin community, make it not community. And I was trying to speak to the thing that I'm critiquing isn't the people, the group of people. It's the rules that we made about it.
Yeah.
The way in which we actually destroy community, the destructiveness within community, not community itself.
And we've talked about in the past, now that's a really good clarification. We've talked about in the past how that some of those destructive forces are a result of bringing with us a kind of, we talk a lot about fundamentalism, bringing with us a still baseline expectation that there is a right way and a wrong way to view a particular thing. And if you want to belong to this community, you need to think this way. Mm. And we've talked about this before, fundamentalism can exist on very conservative spaces and in very progressive spaces. It is not ideologically, preferential. It will show up anywhere where there are individuals who want to reduce all complexity down to binary thinking.
It's the binaries, yeah. As well as some other, I think there's some other important
which
components.
To go back to the term deconstruction was
yes,
part to be like binaries. Are they really real?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
And then we set up our new ones, which is our point, is you do that, you kind of do that dance of breaking those down and then you build new ones. And that's what I was saying kind of destroys community is mm-hmm. when you're like, oh, but these ones instead. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that fundamentalism and community, I think they're mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. I just don't think they go together.
And now for a quick pause in our conversation to tell you about Buy Me a Coffee. And no, friends, this is not an ad where I tell you about what kind of coffee to buy. Although, if you're curious, shoot me an email. I'll let you know. No, Buy Me a Coffee is a platform that allows you, our pod fam, to show your appreciation and support for the Kate and Colby Show through financial contributions, like directly to us. You can make one-time gifts, sort of like, money in the tip jar, thanking us for the episode. Or you can sign on to become monthly supporters and provide recurring donations to the show. This podcast is free for you, the listeners, yay! But it's not free for us, the creators, which is why we've begun to invite you to join us by going to buymeacoffee.com/Kate and Colby. Again, that's buymeacoffee, all one word, .com, you know that part, /Kate and Colby, KateAndColby. And thank you for your belief in our work and for your support of the show. And now, back to the conversation.
freaking fundamentalism. We all grew up that way.
Yeah.
Those of us who are in the deconstruction community, if we're going to call it that.
Are we in it?
Right. I know. Well, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
that's, lowercase d, soft d, little d.
I feel like this conversation might be a little convoluted, huh? It's a little messy. It's messy, but you know what? I'm going to, during our pause that we had to take, which they won't notice because it'll be so beautifully edited by our producer. But I was driving around and I was thinking to myself, this is so messy. Like, what a mess that was that we just recorded that first. And then I was thinking, of course it is. Of course it is. Because this is such a messy.
Yeah.
Like it just is messy. The topic is messy. The space is messy. The thing we're trying to do is messy. The thing we're talking about is messy.
It's happening in real time.
Yeah,
real time. 20 years from now, historians will be able to maybe put this
in some sort of— be more clear or whatever, yeah. So but, I do that a lot anyway when I talk about things. I was thinking about that because I think it's— and I bring it to this conversation because it's so relevant. I think it's a piece of my background as having grown up fundamentalist is that it's that perfectionist piece of, if I sound messy or unclear, if I'm just talking in a real, like I must talk in very put together ways or I should just shut up. And I'm like, no, I'm having a messy conversation with my partner in life about a messy thing. It's fine that it sounds messy. It's fine that sometimes it's unclear. It's fine that I'm verbally processing it and not sure what I think until after I've said it. It's fine if I fumble through it. I just had to walk myself through that a little bit to remind myself of that. So anyway, if you're listening and you're like, this is a hot mess, well, it's supposed to be. But we were talking about a thing. We were saying, we bring fundamentalism with us.
Can I respond to that real quick? Yeah, reminds me of the part of our previous episode where we were talking a bit about the pandemic.
Is that the savior complex episode?
Yeah, but it was the pandemic. We were talking about how we were doing in the context of pandemic, and we were talking about how science is a tool that attempts to understand and define and deal with the facts. So the facts may not change, but quote unquote, the science changes,
right, or really because we've discovered new,
our interaction new with the facts changes as a result of the tool of science. This feels a bit like that to me, which is part of what the messiness of it is. We are in the middle of this shift. We are in the middle of this significant migration away from a kind of religion. And we are constantly adjusting to the situation.
Yeah.
And so it feels a little bit like that, where that's why there might be parts in our journey when we were in a previous movement of the dance where maybe this term, and I think you said you might not have, but I have used it in and out. Like, I might've danced with this term a bit because there was a time in which it felt like it was helpful.
Yeah.
And now as the dance have gone on, again, it's not that the facts have changed, but the science, the interacting with and the trying to categorize and trying to figure out what label makes most sense and where the boundaries for this are and what box to put that in. That's just the process of I don't know, constantly auditing and evaluating. And
so true.
So, it is messy, and I don't know how it can't. I don't know how it wouldn't be.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. A few years ago, if we sat down to have a conversation about this, it would— I would listen to that recording. I wouldn't recognize myself. That's also true. Yeah. And I'm definitely in a more particular, I'm pausing while we're recording an episode. That's fun. It is fun. It's good to be slow and pause. Renee says she refers to her podcast as the pause cast because she pauses so much in it.
Oh, I thought it was because she has cats on.
My cats try to come out here to our podcast all the time. Stingers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm just in a particular stage too where I'm reflective. I'm looking back and reflecting on a lot, kind of spending a lot of time looking at my journey and my place in this space and just reflecting and asking. So that's part of the messiness too, is I'm just— there's other times in my life where I feel more like, let's talk about something and I've got a lot to say about it. And right now I'm more like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Before our break there, we were talking about some of the ways in which the deconstruction movement is what you preferred rather than community. And then we talked a bit about that.
But I don't know.
How those who use and or identify with and or might be described as deconstruction folk, how we can often step on each other's toes in this dance. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if we can talk a bit about that, how so often we bump into each other in this dance for a number of reasons. And we can talk about some of those reasons, but the bumping is real and it's painful and it hurts. Like where an individual might feel like they are, quote unquote, deconstructing. Mm-hmm. And for them, it looks a very particular way and it has a rhythm to it and it has words that make sense and words that don't make sense. And it has a trajectory that they assume is theirs to follow. Like they might have an inkling or an intuition or an instinct. It was very alliterative that the dance is going to take them in this particular trajectory. Maybe because they've followed deconstruction individuals on the internet or they've heard about it or they've seen it. And so they think, okay, this dance is going to take me that way. And so they start moving in that way, but they might find actually that doesn't really make sense to me. That doesn't work for me. That doesn't feel like it's true for me. But now they're a part of a larger network of deconstructing people. Mm-hmm. And if that individual starts to go back to an earlier metaphor, make a little bit of waves in the pool or do a little bit of splashing and do a little bit of question asking, because maybe once they're on this particular dance step, they realize, oh, my feet don't work that way. This is where the fundamentalist piece comes in, because it's like, no. If you're on this journey, this path, this whatever in deconstruction, we need you to look like this, to talk like this, to think like this. And so we end up bumping into each other. And that's one of the reasons I want to bring up. We end up bumping into each other because one of the reasons is we are different and we have different contexts and we're not going to all go on the same journey, the same trajectory. We might all have left out the same exit door, but under no, like, there shouldn't be an expectation then that we would all just find a new place to gather and all then now agree and all be in the same place.
Yeah.
And it's been frustrating for you and I to watch the ethos of, like we talked about earlier, that which has allowed people to leave, an ethos of questioning and curiosity and auditing and sort of not being okay with the status quo. It's been frustrating to then watch that sort of turn in on itself and become yet another version of uniformity and purity.
Yeah, I wrote a little confession on the internet the other day because I was feeling that so much. And the only thing I could do with that was think about the only thing you can do really is make a confession when you have such strong realizations of a trajectory like that. Like, I could get preachy and be like, you guys out here on the internet, stop doing that. But really, I was just thinking about how much I've done that. So it was just a confession of, damn, I've so done that. I've just continued to be fundamentalist. And you want to know what? I want to share what really woke me up to my experience of becoming a new kind of fundamentalist. It was the language used to explain why what I'm doing isn't what people are saying it is. So in Christianity, in evangelical or conservative Christianity, when folks hold you accountable, when they punish you, when they shame you, punishing, shaming, silencing, and holding accountable, when that is being done to you in religious spaces, there's a way that folks in that space will say, that's not what I'm doing. It's not shame, it's love. And it's not punishing, it's accountability. Right? When I realized how much I had moved to a different space and was using the same exact arguments for why what I was doing wasn't what people were saying it was, the exact same arguments, It's love and it's accountability and it's like using the same excuses as the church mm-hmm. is what woke me up. Mm-hmm. If I sound exactly the same as the church and I'm mm-hmm. just saying, oh, it's different because, mm-hmm. well, they said it was different because too, like shaming. There's no amount of...
Rebranding,
explaining, defending that will ever make shame anything other than shame.
Yeah.
Shaming is shaming.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
I just feel so strongly about that now. And gosh, I've been thinking about this idea of making amends for that. You and I have both marveled at the way that, and she worded it this way, the way that Jamie Lee Finch went to the internet and said, she was going to make amends for the ways in which mm-hmm. she participated in some punishing and shaming mm-hmm. By vocalizing these confessions herself. Like, yeah. this is what it's looked like for me. And I just think this is really beautiful. But I was thinking about how I would love to think of some examples of times when I did that and just go back and say, hey, bud, I remember on the internet when I acted like that. And sorry about that.
Yeah.
Thought that I was doing something in the name of justice that wasn't so, but anyway. Yeah, it's just wild how mm-hmm. you can, and you and I talk about all the time how it makes so much sense that we do that, that we shift, deconstruct, move to a different space, and then kind of repeat mistakes and repeat patterns and cycles. But it makes extra sense when you think about how the deconstruction community, movement, group of people, whatever, is all a bunch of folks who are, they've experienced so much religious trauma. We have experienced so much religious trauma. I think when we repeat those unhealthy patterns, that's what we're doing, is just kind of processing our trauma unconsciously, like not really realizing that we're not doing our work there and just kind of regurgitating some of our pain. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. But we're doing it with theoretically new and better ideas. Mm-hmm. And that goes back to what we were talking about earlier, 100%. Where we can, like, at least you and I are comfortable with creating, a hierarchy of better ideas. Mm-hmm. So it feels...
Which makes it hard, right? It makes it hard to totally. To spot, to wake up to shift away from, to even describe why it's unhealthy.
Yeah.
Like, that took me a really long time to click into place around.
Yeah. Okay. And so I take that and I go back to a minute ago, I was saying there's different ways that we clash into each other when we're dancing out here. Mm-hmm. And one of those is because I think I'm going to see if it processes in real time. It mm-hmm. makes sense. When we were in our conservative evangelical fundamental religious days, the hierarchy of good ideas was pretty much firmly established. Mm-hmm. And it was all rooted in a particular reading of the Bible. And as we said earlier, it all leads towards just really one thing that matters, have the right
one overarching narrative that is yes. the way. Yeah.
So, divergences of ideas or beliefs were pretty secondary, but anyways, the hierarchy of what the best ideas was kind of agreed upon out here in shifting world, in post-evangelical and or ex-evangelical world. There is a sense in which we have still maybe a hierarchy of better ideas, but they sometimes will conflict and contrast with other people's hierarchy of ideas. And where I think you and I would like the movement to go is a better appreciation at naming that multiple hierarchies of better ideas can coexist in peace in community.
That's hard for our
sweet
fundamentalist brains.
It doesn't make sense.
It breaks our brains.
It does. And for all sorts of good reasons. But you and I have talked often about how someone who might be on a particular trajectory or kind of dance in their deconstruction journey, they might be driven and compelled by some ideas and some ways of thinking that makes so much sense to them and is really good for them and their immediate family and maybe their community. But it doesn't mean that that needs to be mapped on to the this person over here in a different context, in a different community, maybe with a different set of, I don't know, dreams and aspirations for life. And I think that's part of where we bump into each other in this deconstruction movement is, again, just sort of expecting that it would all line up to be this uniform, agreed upon hierarchy of values and ideas.
Which is the thing we all fled from.
And the people from whom we fled from, this goes back to the evangelicals trying to tell us what we're doing out here and why, they will often accuse us of having no hierarchy of values and ideas. And they just think we're free for all out here debauchering till the cows come home because we don't think anything matters.
I mean, I am. Oh, man. Yeah, that's so true. I was thinking about the distinction between, you know, one of the ways in which we step on our toes in deconstruction community is the distinction between an apostate and a progressive Christian, or the difference between like just a kind of purist deconstructionist. I've walked away from that. Mm. I'm ex-evangelical out of there, and a progressive Christian. A progressive Christian may be deconstructed, and like so much of deconstruction world means so much to them and they want to be a part of the conversation. But then you've got the folks who are like, Christianity, gross, you know, that part of deconstruction world. And that's,
they might use the same hashtag, but very different hierarchy of values and ideas.
Yeah. And there's a lot of stepping on toes in that. I've definitely had some struggle in that in church world of, you know, I'm just a spiritual woo-woo person. And I freaking love prayer, and I love thinking of God as a personal being. And those two places of loving prayer and talking about God like a personal relational being and afterlife stuff, all of that is, it's things that like you expect a person who deconstructs to just, to not talk like that or to not talk about those things or practice that way or to sound that way. Mm-hmm. And I find myself self-censoring and editing a lot, too much when I talk about those pieces of my spiritual practice and who I am. And then the few times that I kind of let that slip, I find there's so much gratitude from other people in deconstruction world, like, oh, thank you. Yeah. I miss that too. Or I want that too.
Like they could.
But they didn't feel like they could. Yeah. They didn't feel like it was safe to do so. I freaking love worship and been thinking about that lately. And so then I talked about it and a whole bunch of people were like, oh my God, thank God I don't have to let go of that. And just some examples of spaces where you kind of feel like, I want to hang out here now because I left that, but now I'm over here and I feel like, oh, I really miss those things, but oh God, I better keep that to myself. Oh wait, crap. Keeping that to myself was the same thing I was doing over there. Oh my God. Yeah. Like we said, messy. I mean, everywhere you go, there you are, right?
Yeah.
Humans. We're just all a bunch of humans out here doing something, not knowing what we're doing.
Yeah. All right, what if we tried to wrap up this episode by attempting to sort of summarize and or explicitly name, if we can, just kind of the reason why you and I don't use the term deconstruction and or consider our work maybe, like we don't aim our work at the deconstruction movement, even though we know that people who are in that world have found us and benefited from us, but we don't necessarily particularly identify with that movement. And maybe we can close out by trying to just state why. And I know we've been doing that all episode long, so this is maybe my own attempt to just bring it home. We're not anti-deconstruction. We are what are we? We're bummed out by the way that it can eat its own. We are, we are maybe more interested in a larger posture of building and growth and, building and growth as opposed to just tearing down and anti and negative.
Yeah.
What else might you add?
I'm over here processing. I don't think I feel the same as you in a need to be like, here's why I don't or am not. I hear you that you do. And you've been saying we, but I was like, I don't know if I identify with that we.
Identify with which we?
Let's name why we don't necessarily aim our conversations toward deconstruction or use that term. I guess I just come back to, again, it feels messy for me. I feel in it and out of it. I feel maybe when you said we're not, I know, right? So
in
messy.
The world, but not
I'm
of
so
it.
Glad.
In the deconstruction world, no. But not of it.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, goodness. That's hilarious. No. No, I think when you were like, we're not anti, I'm like, maybe it's just feeling a little, maybe we're just burnt out. Maybe it's that a little bit. Like, maybe we've just been in it for a freaking long time and we're just kind of post. Maybe we're not anti or post. I don't know. But I think I'm feeling insecure and nervous about the fact that there might be, it might seem like we have this goal of showing why we're not that or not a part of that. And that's just not how I feel. I feel like my deconstructionist folks are my siblings and my partners and my family and my loves and my community and all the other things we said.
Yeah.
I don't know. It feels so both andy and messy to me. I guess. Yeah, I don't like the world that's come at the deconstruction community and said, okay, you deconstruct, but you also got to construct. You got to also build. I don't like that. Mm-hmm. I just want to say to those folks, just leave them alone. Just let them do what they need to. They're doing a thing they need to do. Why are you telling them what they now need to do? And folks did that to us a lot. That was fascinating. We got a lot of criticism. I think it's okay to talk about that now, right?
I'm fine with it.
Okay. Like 3 years ago, there was a lot of criticism that came our way about all you guys do is deconstruct and you need to construct and you're just tearing stuff down and anti and you need to build. And we looked at each other like, us?
I don't think so.
What? Since when? Like, we felt so like, like if you could see me like that looking behind you, like who are they talking to? Are they talking to us? Yeah. It's so weird. Maybe we're just completely like have a
maybe
blind spot and didn't realize that we were just doing nonstop tear stuff down and not build stuff. But I look at our body of work at Socho, Kate Kolb Show, everywhere, and I'm like, I feel like all we freaking do is build stuff all the time. In fact, I'm kind of tired. Can I just take a breath for a second? So I found that to be odd criticism, but in general, when that criticism comes at folks who are deconstructing, like let's say it is actually like legit that those folks are just constantly taking stuff apart, and that was true about folks. Just leave them alone, let them be. That you know what they're doing? They're freaking healing. They're like, I just feel so protective of, like mother hen protective of folks who are going through the process of deconstructing in general.
Yeah.
And then especially when they receive that criticism of, come on guys, you can't just tear things down. You got to build. I'm like, okay, first of all, I disagree with your terms entirely to do this work of looking back over your life and the things that you were taught and trained to be in the world and the narratives you were handed about your life to pick those apart and to like decide that those were unreliable narrators and to start asking yourself what really is, that's
wholly necessary work.
Not only that, but like
it can take a long time
to make a false dichotomy between tearing down and building. Mm. That's what I think I'm getting at. There's a false dichotomy there. If you're just tearing something, to tear something down is to build.
Is to build. You're building things when you're questioning and when you're reevaluating,
boom.
Reassessing.
That's what I'm trying to say. Mic drop.
That like, is that's a kind of building. Thank you.
And it's a, and yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll just leave it at that. So I feel really protective of that. And then I think when you're like, let's summarize, I think probably it's just my personality to be like, I can't summarize why I'm not doing or doing. Like,
yeah, that's fair. That's very Colby.
You know how Glennon and now others as well are like bravely entering this conversation of, I don't have a label for my sexuality. I don't know if I was born this way. It might just be a choice I made. That like, ooh, can I say this? Stepping into that.
Yeah.
Every time G talks about that, I feel my soul relax. Mm. I think there's just recently she talked with Sarah. I think it was when she was talking with Sarah Paulson about that. I think it was because Sarah also doesn't really do that. And they were just laughing about the same thing about like, maybe it's just our personalities, like this deep, like, don't try to tell me what I am or that I'm one thing. And so maybe that's what's going on for me, but that's what's happening for me. So therefore I'm going to just own it. Yeah. I'm going to try to practice just trying to stop explaining it and just be like, I'm uncomfortable being like, oh, I don't really do deconstruction. And I'm also uncomfortable being like, oh, I'm do deconstruction. I don't have a way of saying where I sit or what my label is for my spirituality at all. I don't have a word. I don't have a group, a label that ever feels comfortable for me. And maybe it just never will because of fundamentally who I am inside.
You know, don't like shaming as a tool for control. Yes. You know, you don't.
Don't think that's called justice, friends. They are not one and the same.
You know, you don't like the flattening of perspectives and the expectation that if you want to be a certain thing, then you need to think and believe a certain way. Mm-hmm. So, you know, some of these things.
And I also adore taking old traditions and saying, nope, not that.
Yeah.
Not that.
Yeah.
And breaking things apart. I love burning shit down. I love a good burning shit down.
Yes, you do. And I almost said, and you know, you don't love gatekeepers, but that's not true. That's not true. And part
Where
of what,
is he going
well, part
with
of what's
this?
Coming up for me is the work that you and I have done for 8 years now at Sojourn is to figure out how to create a sense of belonging in a community that is very open and inclusive, but that demands a posture of openness and inclusion and acceptance. Otherwise, that destroys belonging. So we have done gatekeeping at Sojourn Grace.
No, I disagree. I don't think that's gatekeeping.
Okay.
I 100%
all right.
disagree
all right,
with
all right, all right.
you. Gatekeeping is making up shit rules of purity and control and deciding who's in or who's out. And that is not what it is to protect a space and doula a space into belonging and to say, hey, look, everybody belongs. And so like, if you want to hang out here, you gotta get on board with that and make sure that everybody can belong by not shitting on other humans.
You're right. We need a better term than that.
That
term does not describe what we do. So I was trying to name, there is a phenomenon by which people attempt to create a set of expectations and or shared values, and or if you're going to be in this place, here's what is needed.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. Gatekeeping perhaps is not the best way to describe that. I agree with you.
I think it's completely, yeah, it's not a good way to describe it at all, because gatekeeping is a certain thing. But I think if you want a different word, protecting is a great word.
It's a great word. I love it. I'm not attached to the term gatekeeper and all. What it's making me think of, though, is would those in a more evangelical space, would they do similar dodging of the, not dodging. I don't think they would be like, yeah, we're gatekeepers either.
Mm-hmm.
Gatekeeping is like what people on the outside.
Yeah. 100%.
It's like the pejorative way that we describe how the people are sort of creating the boundaries of the groups that are not for us.
Yeah. And conversely, we would get called gatekeepers in our protecting. We would get told you all are gatekeeping. Okay. And I'll even push us one step further. I bet you that sometimes I accidentally do slip out of protect and into gatekeep. And I hate that. That's part of my little confession, is that I think it's easy to accidentally fall into gatekeeping again and to do it in the name of justice and protection and love. That's an easy slip to make. And so you just keep dancing. You say sorry when you do it. You do your best to make amends. Gosh.
Can we do more of that?
Yeah.
Where we...
Can we do our next episode on forgiveness culture? Yeah.
Where we, practice accepting redemption people's apologies.
Practice re-entry into society when you've made a mistake. Practice not canceling human beings.
Don't know how we build meaningful.
Cancel shitty ideologies. Don't cancel human beings. Cancel giant corporations that cause all kinds of harm. Don't cancel human beings. Anyway, all right. That's a whole other episode.
You wanted to end us with a thing.
Are you ready to end? Did you have more to say on that?
I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah.
You wanted to summarize and then I said, I'm not going to do that.
I tried. I did a few sentences of summary work.
You were like, let's summarize. And I'm like, I totally shit on that. Yeah. Like, no, let's not.
Just classic you and me. That's fine. So let us know.
Sorry.
Let us know in the comments. Are you team Kate or team Colby?
All the fellow Colby-minded people are like, wait, but he wanted to give it some actual clarity for once. Let him speak. Oh my gosh.
I think we've done a good job in these last 50, 60 minutes, albeit in like three different sections. We've done a good job, I think, of naming, the difficulty of this conversation, the messiness of it. It's hard inherently, but also I think we've tread well into the territory of the parts of this term and this movement that for us feel antithetical to ultimately what I think those who have left post-shift, whatever, who have left the church, like we have a somewhat shared vision and goal in mind. Just, yeah, we're bumping into each other on the dance floor and it's hard. It's hard and it makes sense. And even though maybe this term doesn't mean as much to me anymore, totally get it.
Mm-hmm.
And I get why it's a helpful word.
All the things.
All right. What you got, babe?
I just wanted to leave with this last little... This is my way of summing things up, okay? Poetry. If I were to make a list of the most beautiful parts of my life, the thing folks refer to as deconstruction would be at the very tippy top of that list. They call it deconstruction when you walk away from the religious structures and ideologies of your youth and your upbringing. I don't know that we ever associate deconstruction with beauty, but it is indeed my most beautiful thing. It's not ashes, although I do find burned piles to be beautiful. The things I have burned have always been life-sustaining. A lot of indoctrinated folks see our burning, and they assume that those of us who've walked away are the ones too wounded to see clearly. I feel badly for their confusion. They see wounded bird unable to fly. But since when has a phoenix suffered? The only suffering I've ever experienced in my life is when I would not let something die when it needed to, or when I've refused to accept that something is indeed gone. What's so beautiful about my deconstruction? That letting go always fuels my thriving, just for starters. Deconstruction for me isn't about what I'm against. It's about what I'm learning to let in, which is basically everything. I'm not too wounded to see. I'm too healed to keep my head in the sand anymore. I'm not too hurt to have faith. I've too much faith to ignore hurts anymore. I'm not too angry to participate. I've participated too much not to be angry. I'm not a lost child of God needing rescued from myself. I've just finally figured out that you cannot be lost from God when she lives within you. So I have made a home inside of myself. It's my most beautiful thing, resting in love outside of religion.
Hey, I got a confession. Been losing all momentum.
If you appreciate the Kate and Colby Show, here are three ways you can show it. One, tell a friend about us. Personal recommendations are still the best way that people find new podcasts. Second, subscribe to the show and leave us a rating and review. Let us know what the show means to you. And finally, support the show financially by going to buymeacoffee.com/Kate and Colby. That's all one word, KateandColby. Every contribution goes directly to this work. Thanks for listening to our Garage Sessions. And don't forget to check out our YouTube page, where you can watch past episodes of our live show, featuring all sorts of amazing special guests, insightful conversations, and general tomfoolery. The Kate and Colby Show is recorded at Holy Living Studios in San Diego and is produced by Josh Gilbert. Until next time, be well. Yeah.